Good evening. Welcome, everybody, to Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Leanne, and I am an alcoholic.
Amen.
For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with a serenity prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. And the restrooms are across the foyer and up a small flight of stairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. And this is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. And the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we are discussing step three, and I'd like for y'all to help me welcome Bobby and Bob. Appreciate you guys coming out tonight. And tonight we're going to start on step three on page 60. And then we'll read a few paragraphs and then we'll let them share their experience on each of these. So step three was made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. So on page 60, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought. Okay. Bobby?
Am I talking about these?
About what I just read?
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My name is Bobby. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Bobby.
And I'm going to be pretty straightforward and pretty to the point. So at this point in the reading, when it's talking about our description of the alcoholic, we're talking about our description as based on the 59 previous pages and the doctor's opinion and all the other chapters. It's given me a pretty good description that I'm an alcoholic. I can't control my drinking. I have an obsession that sets me apart from other people. I don't stop drinking, period. It just doesn't happen to people like me. I just seem to find some sort of idea or reason why it seems like a good idea for a guy like me to take a drink, and once I start, I can't stop. And if you fit that description, that's great. The chapter the agnostic, you know, which follows that. The whole chapter on step four, I'm talking about the second step, is that if you've pretty much got that licked, as far as you can't do anything about that, then step two is the next step. For me, I laugh because that was an easy process. It took me about 3 years to comprehend the first step because I come into AA at about 17 years old. And by the time I was pretty much homeless, I figured out what step one was. And then I believed in God and then thought it was my idea, too. It's funny. Because I really didn't have any other options there. Our personal adventures before and after, and Bill Wilson's story is the very first thing that comes out of the big book after the, you know, the doctor's opinions and the prefaces. And, you know, they're talking about the three pertinent ideas. We were alcoholic and could not manage our lives, which is step one. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. That's step two. C, that he could and would if he were sought. That's also step two. And if I'm an alcoholic and I'm getting ready to read this portion of the book, I've pretty much figured out that I'm licked. There's nothing really else for me to do at this point. You tell me there's a God, I say, yes, there is a God now, because I don't really have any other option as to, you know, what the answer is here, why I can't drink, I can't quit drinking. And this business of God, you know, the three pertinent ideas, I heard a guy who actually said, do you have to read the book? Do you have to read up to page 60 to have those three pertinent ideas? And he said, no, you'll have those on your own experience. And I kind of understand what that means today. But at this juncture, all we're really doing is it's kind of like a checklist, you know. Yep, I am not doing anything about my drinking. Yep, my life still sucks either way, sober or drunk. I mean, that was the condition I came in here. And all of you told me that there is a God, and I argued for a long time. And I just stopped arguing, and basically that's the juncture that, you know, I find myself in here. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
My name is Bob, recovered alcoholic. I like this. It's such a brief, very short concept that I have a serious problem with alcohol. My life is going to be ended soon if I don't stop drinking. I'll stop drinking at that moment, but life will be meaningless. I think Bobby did a good job of describing the first 59 pages before this. And it's nice to study that. I had no clue when I got to rehab at 21 that these things were happening. What I knew for a fact was my evidence in my life, my behavior, was hopeless. I tried for several years to try to manage and control my drinking every way possible. I could not. I could go maybe 3 to 4 days to stop drinking for a couple days, and that was it. I would sit in front of a refrigerator and stare for hours at the refrigerator, trying not to drink. There was no God in my life. There was no higher power. The only human aid I had was myself. The other aides in my life at that moment were police officers, correction officers, judges, and lawyers. They were very willing to manage my drinking. They had a nice little jail sentence hanging up from my head. I had 6 months hanging over my head when I got into AA. They were willing to manage my drinking and my life on a daily basis, 24/7. That didn't sound like a good option to me. I was miserable. Even after I got sentenced, I was told to go to rehab, go to AA as soon as possible. What I did was I went home, took my antabus pills, and drank about every fourth day for 90 days straight. And my life was hopeless. That's what we're talking about. If you have evidence in your life that your life is this bad, you may want to seek out some higher power, whatever that may be. What's nice about this program is, really is, it doesn't say you have to have a serious mental issue, financial issue, family issue. It says we're powerless over alcohol and we could not manage our lives. And then that I've tried, and other people have tried to manage that for many years and couldn't. Now, if you've tried for a couple days and things got a little bad, you might just be on the beginning stages of alcoholism. But if you tried for years to manage and control your drinking and your life is hopeless and helpless like mine was, then you're in the right place. You're ready to do something different. And that's what I've learned is I had to do something different than what I was doing before I got to AA. And I'll pass with that.
Thank you. Okay, we're going to continue on page 60. Being convinced, we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do? The first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But, as with most humans, he is more likely to have varied traits.
Oh, I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sorry this meeting is only an hour long, because this third step for me was revolutionary. It really was. Being convinced of what? A, B, and C. Because if you're not convinced of A, B, and C, then go have another shot at it. And what Bob actually touched on is that I literally believed that I had exhausted every single option there was possible that I could think of before I was willing to even consider a relationship with God. I mean, it really had. I accidentally, like, I failed at killing myself. It was a suicide, and I failed. I mean, I accidentally didn't kill myself. That's pretty funny, and I'm glad you all understand that. And now I'm in AA. I mean, that's how bad it is. Like, okay, I wake up in another bathtub and, you know, the water's cold, so it didn't work out so well. Now I'm convinced. And what AA is telling me here, you know, I had a lot of old-timers who cared way more about my feelings, I'm sorry, about my life than they did about my feelings. So they spared me nothing. And they told me exactly what it was I was dealing with. And, you know, this part here, I love this part of the book because I hate it when people get confused. If anything, if you walk out of here confused, we haven't done our job. And they let me know what the third step was about. I wasn't confused at all. It says, which is we decided to turn our will and our life over the care of God as we understood Him. And people ask me what God's will is all the time. And I tell them, you're going to have to take the steps. You know, half the time I don't know from my own experience. You know, but what this is trying to do is give me a basis of what it's not. And as far as how I find that and what is God's will and what is it not, it says, just what do we mean by that and just what do we do? So I'm always baffled. Like, how do you not know what you're looking for? It tells you what to do, what we mean by that and just what we do. The first requirement, if we're convinced that any life on its self-will can hardly be a success on that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. So let me see how I can figure out if it's God's will. Am I in collision? Then it's not God's will. And I was in collision a whole lot with a whole different bunch of institutions before I came to AA. And I didn't see my part in it. I really did not see my part in it at the time. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show. I love this description. I could just see me like yelling at everybody else, telling them what to do. He's forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. Not the way that it says, but in his own way. If his arrangements only stay put, if only people would do as he wished, the show would be great. And I put in parentheses, life would be great. Everybody, including himself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. Trying to make these arrangements, our actor may sometimes be quite virtuous. And it gives me a variation of things. And so in a nutshell, I'm like the guy who shows up to a job like 3 times and tells the manager how to do his job and expects to be paid like that guy. I'm inconsistent, I'm inconsiderate, I don't have the experience, but I'm pretty sure I should know how the rest of that company should run, and it'll run smoothly if you only listen to me. And I always joke with that because, you know, I was in AutoZone for a while when I was going to my first rehab, and those people just did not understand how much of a stellar person I was. They had to change my schedule because I went to so many damn rehab meetings and psychiatrist meetings and had to go to AA meetings, so I was required. And they hated me because, like, my schedule sucked. I couldn't ever work because I was in meetings constantly. And I didn't understand why they didn't appreciate me, you know? Other than, like, stuff went missing in that store, and I was always there, and I didn't know, you know? It just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to anybody. You know, in retrospect, why I'm the guy who's least qualified to tell anybody what to do about anything, yet I'm trying to tell you. It's pretty funny. And, you know, if I think I'm not that person, you know, which, you know, initially I'm like, I don't know, that's not me. You know, when because the whole idea of coming into Alcoholics Anonymous and finding, you know, relief from the condition that I suffered from, I was like, well, maybe they got me wrong. No. So sometimes I might be nice and sometimes I might be mean. They use big words. So sometimes if I gotta ask you politely and you do what I say, or maybe I have to threaten you and maybe pull out a baseball bat, then I'll be that guy. And I did both. And you know what was crazy is that my life was full of calamity. And I'm the guy scratching my head going, I'm nice 1 minute and I'm, you know, not so nice the minute. What's the big deal? Why is everyone all, you know, I've been out of shape and pissed off at me? You know, because I'm so inconsiderate about, inconsistent about my whole life and who I am. None of it really adds up. None of it. And I'm playing God at this point. That's basically what this is alluding to. But I like it because it says, as with most humans, he's more likely to have varied traits. In other words, I'm not a dummy. I will figure you out. I seriously will. If I need to make mommy feel guilty so I can use her car and wreck it in a ditch again, you know, to serve the purpose that I want it for, then I will do that. And I have no problem doing that. And if I have to show up with a dozen roses, you know, to get her to come on a date with me, I will gladly do that. And my motives are never good. That's ultimately the one thing that is pretty consistent throughout that. That's all I have.
Bob, an alcoholic. What I've learned about myself in this concept is I'm always out to make myself feel better. I will use anything, any way possible, any manipulation, lying, cheating, stealing, to make myself feel better. Early on in the Dots community, you talked about being restless, irritable, and discontented. That's my life since day one, when I was in kindergarten. All through the junior high, high school, every aspect of my life, I never felt contented, serene, happy, peaceful, unless I had some booze in me. Because alcohol is a good way to manage that. Alcohol was very good at making me feel good for a long period of time. And once you get to this process, when you get to step three, hopefully you're not drinking. I wasn't. I was in rehab. I was dry for a few weeks, and I got to step three. So alcohol was no longer the problem at that moment. What was the problem was me. Every aspect of my life was drinking or making myself feel better or fulfilled or just contented. And I would do any means possible to do that. So the whole thing was I was going to manage that no matter what. Like Bobby said, I will figure you out. I will manipulate you. I will figure what weak spot you got. If I can't figure out, you won't be in my life very long because I'm going to use somebody else. I'll take advantage of whoever I can, wherever I can, to make myself feel whole, complete, or at least happy for 5 minutes. And when I got sober, 5 minutes of peace of mind was really a long time. I've been months and months feeling miserable. And I got to this thing, and it's really basically just being convinced. Now, I had 10 years of evidence that I was convinced that alcohol wasn't working. I had a lot of evidence, not just judges and court systems, but I had my family, every one of my drinking buddies in the Navy. Nobody wanted to be around Bob any longer because they were tired of me putting up with the crap, you know, and I was just done with that. So once I got convinced that I could no longer manage my life, I could no longer force things to happen my way to get happy, I had to find something different. And like I said, the motives are really cool. I will do whatever I can to make myself feel better and not even understand why I'm doing it. Because that's how sick my mind is. We will do whatever possible to make our equilibrium in life good and lie to ourselves that, hey, it's okay. I'm doing the right thing for the right reasons. I'm really doing nice things for you, aren't I? That's how I thought for a long period of time, that I could not take an honest look at myself and my behaviors. More importantly, I couldn't even look at my thoughts behind that. And it's hard to do that, especially when you got an alcoholic pickled brain like I had. You know, how do you fix a pickled brain and it's still pickled? Not easily. So I had to take an honest, hard look at the fact that human beings, myself, could no longer run the show. I had to find a different avenue to try something different. And like Bobby said, the last door on the road. If you're in a long hallway and there's lots of little solutions on the side, you got some psychiatrists over here, you got some counseling, you got medical people here helping you out, you got mommy bailing you out. Once all those doors are closed, you got nowhere else to go. You got the last door on the right, that's the grave. Last door on the left, that's AA. I liked AA much better.
Thank you. Right, over on page 61. What usually happens? The show doesn't come off very well. He begins to think life doesn't treat him right. He decides to exert himself more. He becomes, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit him. Admitting he may be somewhat at fault, he is sure that other people are more to blame. He becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is his basic trouble? Is he not really a self-seeker, even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if he only manages well? Is it not evident to all the rest of the players that these are the things he wants? And do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Is he not, even in his best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
And I would work hard at this. That's so funny. I use the term loser differently in AA than other people, because they called me a loser when I got here, and they gave me the definition of what they said was a loser, and a loser was a taker, and I was a loser when I came to AA. That's the reason why no one wanted to be around me, and the reason that nobody wanted to be around me, I love this, because I came in AA, I was so lonely, you know, and people tell me all the time, you know, and I understand, I'm not judging. You know, no one wants to be around me. She left. She took the kids. And, you know, I hear their story and I say, good. They're probably safer that way right now until we can get you sober. I hope you don't hurt anybody until the meantime. And when I came in AA, and I know I was getting discharged from the Navy, and it was not pretty. And I always, this is my joke, the NCIS does not look like what it looks like on TV. It does not. I can vouch for that. And I was really bent out of shape about that. You know, that's just one example in my life about how the show didn't come off very well. I was saying I was doing one thing and I was doing something else, and it didn't quite match up. Some guy with an M16 wanted to talk to me and come bring me down to a room. You know, and if I'm such a stellar guy and I'm doing what everyone else is doing, then why is this stuff happening to me? You know, I become indignant. You know, the show doesn't go off very well. Life doesn't treat me right. On the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious. You know, it doesn't make sense to anybody. You know, I was nice to you last time. I'll be a little bit nicer to get my way this time. And I threatened you last time. Now I'm going to go smash your window out, you know. You know, whatever I have to do here on the next occasion to get what I need. And it still doesn't suit me. Even after I get what I want, the play still doesn't suit me. I'm somewhat at fault. Other people more to blame. Check. Becomes angry, indignant, self-pitying. Yes. What is my trouble? What's wrong with me? God, what's going on with me? I'm such a nice person. I'm such a nice guy. A self-seeker when trying to be kind. That's funny. I'm actually trying to get something out of you even when I'm being nice. That's basically what it says. I want something in return. It's not something for nothing. I want something for something. This is an exchange. I hope you're aware of that. And I will be back. And I'm waiting for a return. The rest of the players, things he wants, people just don't understand. They need to get with the program. Do not his actions make each of them wish to retaliate? Snatching all they can get out of the show. Because when I push, you push back. You push just as hard. And that's irritating. Because I'm trying to get my way. Don't you know that? In my best moments, I'm a producer of confusion rather than harmony. So my best shot in Alcoholics Anonymous, my best shot at life up to this point is I am a producer of confusion. That's what I bring to the table. That's what I bring. And I want everything to just go back to the way it was because I quit drinking. And I did that, you know, at 17. How come everything isn't going back to the way it was before? How come everyone isn't throwing at me a parade? I'm sober. It's been like a week. I'm not even having the shakes anymore, you know. And here I am. I still have this mess laid out in front of me. I have all these people. I've been running, working like a job. I work my mom like a job. You know, she had to take meds because of me. And I'm going to a meeting for a week. What's wrong, Mom? What's going on? I'm not drinking now. And I have nothing, I have no idea. It's not even on the radar that I've been working these people like a job. And my sponsor put it to me in a way that really hit home when I first came to AA. At this juncture, you know, when I read We Agnostics, nothing to do with me, right? And I'm reading this third step. He said, what is your conception of God at this point? And I said, I didn't really put any thought into it. He said, well, I lived as if there was no God. And here we are. It's telling me how I'm living right here, as if there were no God. I'm just going to kind of make stuff up as I go along. Sounds good to me. It's convenient. Boom. And everyone's pissed off. And I've agitated and stepped on everyone's toes around me. And this is the juncture where I'm at. Thanks.
Bob Alcoholic. To me, there's two words that I just like or dislike at different times. One's intentions and one's actions. I judge myself on my intentions. Other people judge me on my actions. And for whatever reason, they never matched up when I was drinking or even early on in sobriety. I was intended to do something right. I was intended to do something good for somebody else. But I never seemed to actually ever do that. Not very well, anyways. And when I wasn't doing that up, when I wasn't matching up to that intentions, I felt bad. I felt negative. You know, you feel shame, guilt, remorse. I'm not going to tell anybody I felt that way. If you're like me, I didn't talk about my feelings or problems for many years. I grew up in a household where you didn't talk about things. You drank about it. Or you yelled about it. You threw things. That's what I learned early on. So when I got to this process of the thing about, you know, acceptance and accountability for myself, actually being responsible for my actions, no, I'm the blame game guy. It's always somebody else's fault. Mommy and daddy growing up, my sisters, people in school. I joined the Navy. I had a really good resentment for there. It was always their fault. Somebody higher up in the world was putting me down. They wouldn't let me live up to my expectations of potential. They was always telling me I was doing something wrong. Guess what? I was. And when you go to work in the Navy and you get drunk and you show up the next morning drunk and not looking real good and smelling bad, and you go to muster, and then you go find a place to sleep for 4 hours, they're usually not very happy. They try to find you because they're missing you. They want to know where you're at. You might have fell off the ship. Huh? It's happened. I had several guys in the ship I was actually drowned. Coming up to this point where, okay, now you can't do that anymore. That behavior is not working. Drinking is no longer a part of the option. Now your behavior, your interactions with other people still aren't making you happy. I spent a lifetime using external things to make me happy. Booze is one of them, but people, places, things, music, food, exercise, put any label on anything you can use externally, self-esteem, pride, graduation from colleges, promotions at work, anything outside of myself that can make me feel good was possible. What I learned, really, was happiness is an inside job. Whatever's happened in my life now, whatever's going on internally, is more important than what's happening externally. And that comes from a higher power, something external for me, which I couldn't do for myself. I couldn't make myself happy. I tried. And then I found out that if you keep on doing those collision things, keep on having negative behaviors. Early on, I always had this fear. I wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning. What do I do now? Who's going to catch me doing something wrong now? I hated being found out. It made me feel very uncomfortable. You know, when I get to work and I have these yearly evaluations, I still hate them. I got another coming up the next month. I do not like being judged by other people. But now my behaviors actually meet up much closer to my intentions. So I actually can have a good evaluation for my boss who I've had for 15 years. I can get pulled over by a police officer and not worry about going to jail. I have all these valid stickers and stuff on my car that I still own, and insurance is paid off. You know, they're actually in my name. That's a valid, those are important things, because I did a lot of things badly to get by in life, and now I can do the things good and get by in life much better. And I'll pass with that.
On page 62. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them, even though we would have liked to. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on our own power. We had to have God's help.
Well, I guess the blame game's over. I was talking to somebody last week or sometime recently, and they said they had a blame thrower. I can relate. And now this is telling me, no, I'm afraid not. You're the problem. And this is where I'm telling my sponsor that my mom sucked at being a mom. I mean, she was terrible. The Navy, they did me unjust. The banks, they were wrong. I didn't owe them all that money. It was someone else. Every girl that I had come into contact with, there was something definitely wrong with them, because they had met me, obviously. That was wrong. Mom was not happy. Dad said, don't come home. Puppies went across the street when I walked around. My sponsor would sit outside and talk to me after the meeting, and he'd say, what do all those things have in common? You, dummy. You. And so if we fix the problem, then we won't have a problem, will we? And see, I was, you know, always trying to play, you know, it was that, it was this, it was something else. But it tells me right here, our troubles are basically of our own making. So if you're in AA and your troubles aren't of your own making, tough luck. You know, they told me a long time ago in AA, if you're in AA and you're in trouble, it better be your fault. Because if it is your fault, the good news is you can do something about that. If it's not, I don't know how that's going to work. My problems arose out of myself, an extreme example of this, though I usually don't think so. Oh, God, I love that part. I don't see why everybody's mad at me. I don't see it. I actually was delusional for so long that I didn't think that I was running game. And it wasn't until I met people who the problem had been solved and said, you're running game. And we know this because we ran game too. And that week ain't going to work. It ain't going to work. It's going to stop. Above everything, we alcoholics must be rid of this selfishness. So if selfishness kills me, then selflessness has got to be the answer. Now, the guy who's riding me on the way home from the interstate, he can do that all he wants, and he can give me sign language and, you know, tell me to do things that are physically impossible and morally wrong. And when he pulls up next to me at the stoplight, you know, he can do that. I can't. Why? Because I'm an alcoholic, and that stuff blocks me from God. And this is what it's telling me I got to do. And I'm not telling anybody what they got to do. It says what we got to do as alcoholics. We muster, it kills us. God makes that possible. I've tried figuring it out every other way. I've went to church. You guys ever heard of Kabbalah? I don't even know what the hell that is. But I was drunk enough one day to go to the library and pick that up and read it and think that was going to work when I was still drunk. I read it for about 3 days, and it told me to wake up in the morning and meditate on some certain word that was powerful and wish it for other people. And on the third day, I was so hungover and tired of meditating, I threw that book away. I have tried your God method, or my way of doing it with God. I've tried other things. There seems no way, not like some of us, there might be a way. Any bitty chance that there's a way, there's no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. Many of us had moral, philosophical convictions galore, but we could not live up to them even though we would have liked to. That's hilarious. You know, I used to tell people, you know, don't talk that way to women, and let me drink. And let me drink. My mom used to slap me across the face, you know, being around me and hearing the way that I acted when I had a couple in me. And when I'm sober, you know, it's all, you should do this and you should do that. I'm going to do this and this is what I'm going to do. And not so much when I'm drunk. Because I care way too much when I'm sober. And I don't care at all when I'm drunk, man. There is no middle ground. So I can't live up to these convictions. Your convictions aren't going to do it for me, you know? They have to come, so this power of God has to come into my life, because me knowing that I don't want to drink, that's a conviction. I am not going to drink, and it don't work. Neither could we reduce our self-centeredness much by wishing or trying. We had to have God's help. You know, in a nutshell, anything that I could have possibly done by this point, I've tried it. I've tried it twice, some of it three times, and it still hasn't worked. I'm still lonely and I'm still in AA because things are going so well. And I'm reading a book with a grown man. I know his first name. That's how good my life was going at that point. What's your name? Please help me save my own life, please. And can I have a couch to sleep on? You know, that's where I'm at this point. Nothing that I have been able to bring to the table has done the job. So what's next?
Bob, alcoholic. What's nice about this whole process, and it is a process, about figuring out step three is there's no action involved here yet. All we're really doing is making an honest look at your health. Take a look at who you are, what you think, how you acted, and make a convincing idea that maybe that's not the right way to live. You know, I love this thing. We've had these lovely philosophical and moral convictions. I've always known right and wrong, good and bad. I wasn't able to live up to it. Because my self-will. See, if good and bad, or doing good and moral things made me feel better, I wouldn't be here tonight. Those things didn't work for me. Like Bobby, I tried religious concepts of recovery. At 17, I was involved in a Christian group in high school. We went on a retreat. I became a born-again Christian. Accepted Jesus Christ in my life. Lasted about 3 days. That's just my experience. By Tuesday, I was drunk. Because between Saturday and Tuesday, nothing changed. All these great ideas and grand thoughts of God coming into my life and making me feel better and do things, nothing happened. You know why? I didn't do anything. Did I go to church? Did I pray? Did I reach out to other people? Did I change my behaviors less selfish? No. I got drunk again and again and again. So to me, it's really important that I'm pretty sure there's probably no psychopaths in here tonight. Can't guarantee it, but I'm fairly problematic that there's nobody really morally crazy in here. So we all pretty much know what right and wrong is. Probably have some pretty good moral ideas and pretty good philosophical thoughts. We're probably some pretty smart people. I was, at least I thought I was, but guess what happened? Alcohol took over. My self-will, my desire to get drunk, took over. That was much stronger than my ability to stop drinking on my own or live a good moral, philosophical life. So if you're in these chairs tonight, and identify with that, you're in the right place. If you're in these rooms tonight and sober, you got a much better chance of following through with the next process once we get down to the actual where we take step three. Because we can think about step three all day long. I did. I thought about step three for many years. I got sober at 21. I did not work the steps past step two for about four and a half, five years because I could not fully understand God. I can put a concept of God in my life, but I wasn't willing to accept or put into action anything about God. So I stayed dry for 4.5 years. And at the end, my moral, philosophical life, my self-will had not changed. I got to the point where I had to accept some other ideas about God and recovery, or I was going to die. So when we talk about this thing, we're not talking about some simple, random thoughts. We're talking about life or death. It's my life or my death. And if you're an alcoholic like me, it's your life or your death. And I'd love to talk about step three, and I actually love to get down on my knees and pray about step three, and then I like to put step three into action. Because step three is really more about action. What am I doing to turn my will and life over to the care of that God that I understand on a regular basis? What am I doing daily to put that into some purposeful living ideas, not just some theoretical concept? If I wanted to do that, I'd go down to church, to the college at ODU and have a philosophical class about God, or a religious talk about God. In here, we're talking about life or death. Continue to behave a certain way, continue to run self-will, continue to get negative behaviors, I will go back to drinking again. I'm not a saint. I make mistakes on a regular basis. But I try, to the best of my ability, to accept another guy's will in mind and follow that by action. So my moral and philosophical convictions are actually evident now. When I pay my taxes on time, when I show up to work on time, when I go to my mom's house and do some work at her house, when I not cut the person off on the street, when I don't flip them off when they cut me off, when I don't chase them down like I used to do for a long period of time. Those things are real, tangible evidences of something changing in my life. And it's not on my own actions. If I could do it myself, if I could wish all my problems away, I love that. Wish my problems away. I spent years doing that. Going to bed, hoping nothing would be different the next day, hoping that the problem I had with the court systems wouldn't be there the next day. How many people have tried that? Just really wish. really hope that this is going to be different next time. And nothing changed. So that's all I got.
Thanks. On the bottom of 62, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal, we are his agents. He is the father, we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was a keystone of the new and triumphant arc through which we passed to freedom.
And we started this reading about taking the third step, and it says, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to the care of God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? We've just answered that. And now we're on the just what do we do? So if I know what not to do, and I've figured that much out by my own experience, and someone's pointed that out to me, how well that's been working for me, now the next thing to do is to actually put some sort of idea in place. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Well, why are we going to do that? First of all, it didn't work. Next, moving right along, they don't give you any other explanation other than it didn't work. That's it. So we're just going to move this, keep this going right now. In this drama of life, God was going to be our director. Here's an idea that there's a concept that I can actually grasp for the first time. Because now I've realized that I have been playing God. I have most definitely, I am now convinced after reading this and really praying and talking to other people who have recovered, I have pretty much put my finger on it that yes, I have been playing God and I've done a terrible job as well. So now all I got to do is hey, he's going to do it. He's going to be the boss. I got a boss now. At least I know who he is, because I was the worst boss I ever had. You know, I was also the worst sponsor I ever had. It didn't work out very well. Most good ideas are simple. This concept was the keystone in new and triumphant arts, which we passed to freedom. They don't really give too much else about that. It's a good idea. It's simple. That's why it's a good idea. And it also wasn't my idea. That's also why it's a good idea. You know, when I'm new, I'm like, I have many ideas. If you only knew. I used to get hit with the idea fairy all the time before I took the steps. But my sponsor just told me, you know, this is what we're going to do. We have your concept, correct? And it's kind of telling us that he's basically the boss. You can church it up all you want. Director, principal, father, you know. And you know, knowing my experience, based on my experience of playing God all along, you know, how am I going to do, you know, with him being the boss? I might have a couple of misgivings with that, you know. And everybody told me, that's okay. We expect you to, you know, because I was brand new. I wasn't used to the idea of God being God and me being a servant to God. I was not. That was a foreign idea to me my entire life. So that was good. That was great news, because for me, simple was better. Simple was much better, because I didn't have to figure anything out. Now I'm getting into the clear-cut directions on what I'm going to do about that. Thanks.
Bob, alcoholic. Here's where I got caught up in a lot of different things, because I wasn't going to let God be in my life at all. I grew up a religious person in the Catholic Church. I did not buy into, believe, or accept that concept of life. It didn't work, like Bobby said. And then my life, being the director of my life and being playing God, didn't work either. So I was stuck at a turning point in life where nothing was working. Booze stopped working. Running my life wasn't working any better. And God, as I understood him, wasn't working. And what I learned in reading how it works is I had to let go of my old ideas absolutely. What that means to me is I had to let go of all my ideas of religion, God, and everything else I had about that, and try something new. Whatever that may be. I still don't practice religion on a regular basis, but I do practice AA on a regular basis, every day. And what's nice is that the concept to me was mine. An idea is simple. What we're asking you to do here is just try AA. Come in the door. Walk in the arch and pass to freedom. Come in the door of AA. Sit down. Listen to what we have to offer. If it works for you and applies to you, stay. If it doesn't, you're welcome to leave whenever you want. That's what's nice about this program. What I had to do is first stop playing God. What that means to me is I had to stop acting like I was in charge of everything on a regular basis. I had to stop trying to manipulate, manage, control, figure out things on a regular basis, daily. That means in every aspect of my life, family, friends, job, 7-Eleven down the street. I was no longer the one trying to run the show. And it's very hard to do that. And then it says, God is the principal. Whatever higher power I have, he is my leading man. I'm his agent, which means I'm his worker. So if I'm a member of AA, I'm here to do some work. I'm here to actually practice some principles on a regular basis. I'm here to help another alcoholic stay sober today. That's what we're doing. That's what Bobby and I are doing here. We're not here to, you know, build up our own ego. We're here to actually pass a message of recovery to somebody else who may need it. So when we're talking about God, it's your God. If you're a religious person, please practice it as much as you can. If you have other concepts of idea or gods, please, if it's working, please let it go. If not, talk to somebody after the meeting. We'll sit down and discuss our concepts and beliefs of God with you and show you how it works to stay sober. Because we're here to help you stay sober, not become a nun or a priest or anything else. That's what we're here for, to show you how this program will help you stay sober and live a productive life. And I'll pass.
Over on page 63, we were now at step 3. Many of us said to our Maker, as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. We thought well before taking the step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him.
And I encourage anyone who hasn't read the paragraph above that to read that as well. And the prayer, it says exactly, it expresses an idea. And if I truly mean that prayer, then I'm going to feel an effect most of the time. Most people I talk to who take the third step prayer, and they have no reservations, they do feel that. But in a nutshell, people, are always there to dumb it down for me. To build with me and do with me as thou wilt, not is what I think God should do. God, I know what you should do with me. I'm telling you, you should give me $1 million right now. And there's none of that involved there, because it's you do with me as you wish. Relieve me of the bondage of self, which I've identified clearly on the preceding pages, that I may better do thy will. I'm not asking God to relieve me of anything for nothing. I'm asking him to do something so that I can do something for him. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, that way of thy love, and that way of life. So I'm asking for the same thing, essentially. Take away whatever it is, the selfishness, the self-centeredness. Take that away from me, that victory over them would bear witness to someone else. That means that so someone else can see what you did for me, God, take this away. Not take it away because I don't want it anymore. Take it away because I don't want it and I want to live different and I want you to be the boss and I want to serve your children. And in order for that to happen, you got to do this for me because I already know I can't get rid of self completely. So take these away so the other people can see what you did for me. May I do thy will always. Oh God, they just nail the coffin. Always? Always? It's your prayer. It's your third step. I said it and I meant it, and I didn't realize I was screwed right after that too. Because I talked to my sponsor, and I talked to a lot of alcoholics too, and it's always funny. Who made the decision, Bobby? Well, I did. How long ago did you make that decision? Almost 10 years ago now. Well, no one here made you make that decision. You made the decision. And what's funny is that, prior to actually knowing what this meant and taking this step, I was just a belligerent fool. I don't dress things up. I just did not care, And I was so against God and AA, I thought you were losers, I judged you. Yes, I'm going to be homeless in a while now, but you're homeless right now. So, ha ha. And I don't have to do what you do either, by the way. I feel sorry for you. And so I rebelled with this idea of God. Funny thing is this sounds like it's going to be like I'm paying a price, right? And, you know, prior to coming to AA, I was like, I'm not doing this crap. I'm not taking no steps. No, I don't have some old man telling me what to do. I don't even call you every day. I don't have to make any coffee. I don't have to show up anywhere you tell me to. And I'll sign the slip myself. Thank you. You know, I wasn't going to do any of that. And I was like, good. I'll do what I want. But I still paid a price. I just paid a different price. And I'm a guy who kind of looks at it that way. You know, I'm trying to see the angle. And at this point, I've already paid a price enough to know that this one sounds a little bit better than the one I've been paying. But it's funny because, you know, one thing I know about alcoholics, you're out here the Whopper story. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I do. I meet people like me who are just as, you know, messed up as a left-handed football bat when I came into AA, you know, wanting something for nothing. I want to feel better. I don't care. I really don't care if you want to feel better. You know, I'll buy you another drink if that's all you want. Now, if you want to do Alcoholics Anonymous, you want to quit drinking, that's my business. But anything else, you know, you probably brought that upon yourself. Just like I brought it upon myself, just like people told me, you know, you've been running your life, you've been acting like God, so here we are. Now, the Whopper story is, you know, I'm the guy who goes to Burger King, and I know where to get the Whopper. I know exactly where to go to get the Whopper. And I wait, and I look at the picture, and I'm like, I want that Whopper right there. And I see the guy next to me, he orders it. Now I know exactly where to go and what to ask for and what to do. He goes up to the next register, she gives him the money, and then the Whopper comes in. And I do the same exact thing, and I order the same thing, right? I order the same thing, and I get up to the window, and instead of paying $2, I want to pay $1. And I want to bargain with you. I want to bargain with you. So if I get a dollar, if I give you a dollar, I don't get half a Whopper? No, you don't get jack. Have a nice day. And that is the third step. It's either all or nothing. It's black or white. You're in or you're out. Are you done running your game? And that's what people told me here. Are you done? And at that point, I pretty much figured out that, yeah, I was done. I didn't want to ever drink again. So this was pretty easy for me, you know, being that, you know, I had nowhere else to go. It was an easy decision for me. It wasn't at first, the first time I heard it. I was like, nah, you guys are trying to get something from me. And I did it the way I wanted to do it. And obviously, I'm sitting here again, you know. So, if you're new, it's not as bad as it sounds. life is great. Life is great. I guarantee you that everything I have in my life as a result of taking these steps, especially this one, is better. It is not my fault. I've been sober for almost 10 years. That is not my fault. I have a great job. That is not my fault. I have a beautiful wife that is way out of my league who calls me Poppy and speaks Spanish. Her second language is English. That is not my fault either. All of that is a result of me taking these steps and seeing what God really wanted for me and getting out of the way. And when I serve Him, all sorts of stuff happens. It didn't happen right away, and it took years for some of that stuff to come. But I had to earn it. And I had to pay the price like everybody else in here. So I'm glad that you guys, you know, when I came in, you told me what it was, really, what this meant. Thanks.
Yeehaw. Let's try to wrap this all up in one neat little nutshell. I wish I could rewrite the book sometimes, because I'm, of course, smarter than most people. But I think in this process, it says we are now at step three. I wish you put the last sentence in there ahead of the rest of it. We thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready. That we could at least abandon ourselves utterly to Him. Then we could do the prayer. Early on, we talked about the keystone of this new and triumphant arch. What I learned early on, and someone showed me, was step one is one side of a doorway. If you're really convinced that alcohol and drugs is bad for you, and you can no longer live that way, step two is the next step, the other side of the doorway. Right? Something greater than you can help you stay sober. We'll give you a meaningful, productive life. And then we get to step three. The keystone is the very top part of the arch, the middle bone, or the little stone that stays in the middle that holds the arch together. So once you get step one down, get step two down, find out that maybe a step three possible, then you walk through the doorway. And we're not asking you to walk through any crazy doorway. Just walk in the door of AA. And then once you get here, find the sponsor, who can explain the rest of the stuff and go through the rest of the steps. Because if I could figure this out my own way, take the book home and read it and study it and figure it out myself, I would have done it. I tried it. I'm sure people in this room have tried it. Usually over a glass of wine or some booze. Just saying. That's just my experience. So once we get to that point, yeah, you're convinced that something better than you can help you stay sober. We're not asking you to change your whole lifestyle. Get a new haircut. Change how you wear your clothes. You know, get a different job. We're going to ask you to try AA's way of life on a daily basis, one day at a time, show up on a regular basis, work the rest of the 12 steps, and see the results. What are the results of these steps? I can tell you what Bobby said. I've had sobriety continuous almost for 30 years. In about a month, I'll pick up a 30-year chip. That's freaking amazing. From a guy who wanted to commit suicide at age 21, had no hope, my life is meaningful and productive. I've got a job. I've been to college. I've got three different little diploma pieces of paper that I don't put on the walls anywhere. But that means I've got a possibility of getting a career. I've had the same career for 16 years. Amazing. A guy like me can have a job and a career. I've got family members who care about me. I got a wealth of friends now. I have two cars that are paid for. They got, like I said, all the legal stuff on it. I own a house. Imagine that. They give me a mortgage. Better yet, I pay it every month. That's a new thing for me. I didn't pay all my bills all the time. And those are all results of, like Bobby said, something greater than me came into my life, showed me some direction, showed me some principles and actions that I could take on a regular basis, and that I could get these great results. The promises do come true after step 9 and 10. The step 3 promises is that you can have a new way of life if you're willing to abandon yourself to God or to this program or to whatever concept of God you believe in, whatever that may be. That's what's nice about this program. We let anybody in with any belief system. You can stay as long as you want with whatever belief system you want. It's an amazing process. And if you do that, then you can go on to the rest of the meat of this program, which is step 4. And I'll pass with all that stuff. Thanks for letting me speak tonight.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it, you guys. Tradition basket. Every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. And we'll start with announcements. I've got one here. This group is going to have a weekend with simply the steps. This is not this coming weekend, but the following. It's March 20th and 21st. We've got Bob D. from Las Vegas and Valerie D. from Richmond. And they're going to be coming in that Friday the 20th in this very room at 6:30 in the evening. We're going to go through, starting at 6:30, Lack of Power, Came to Believe, and then we'll adjourn at 9:30. And then on Saturday the 21st, we're going to start again at 9 o'clock in the morning on Trust God, Clean House. At noon, we'll have a potluck lunch. Bring a dish if you wish. And 1 o'clock will be Help Others, and we'll adjourn at 2:30. So it's simply the steps. I've got flyers up here on the table. If you can announce it at any groups you go to, we're hoping to have a good turnout for that. Are there any other AA-related announcements? Yes.
My brother, an alcoholic, in our national company, it said that the New Day group had a 12:30 meeting from Monday through Sunday. I don't know what the confusion with that was. There is no 12:30 meeting on Sunday. The 12:30 meeting is from Monday through Saturday. So there is no 12:30 meeting on Sunday. So this month. Thank you.
My name is Melissa, and I'm an alcoholic. Check on that. That's actually at my home group, which is at the DBRC, the Oceanfront Brunch Bunch. We have 9:30, 12:30, and 4:30. They got it wrong in the harmony. The 12:30 and 4:30 is at my home group, which is at the corner of 19th and Baltic at the Oceanfront. Thanks.
Thank you.
Frank, alcoholic. Frank. March 14th, private study group will be celebrating.
Thank you.
Cool.
Any other announcements for AA? Right. Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting. Will all home group members please raise your hand? Okay. Thank you. Newcomers, is there anyone here that's in their first 30 days of sobriety? We'd like just to welcome you and get to know you. I'd like to introduce yourself with your first name. Any newcomers?
I'm Randall, I'm an alcoholic.
Randall.
Welcome, man.
Yes.
John Paul, an alcoholic.
John Paul.
Welcome.
Hey, my name's Dan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey Dan. Welcome.
Yes.
My name's Steph, I'm an alcoholic.
Yep. Steph, welcome.
I'm Garrett, I'm an alcoholic.
Garrett, welcome.
Really glad y'all are all here. Behind me on this table, there's literature. The books are for sale. They have a minimal price that's on the inside. You can see home group member or myself after the meeting if you'd like to purchase one. There's some newcomer packets. If you're new to AA, it has a meeting list in there that has a list of where meetings are throughout the area. And sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship in AA, we have Rick and Ryan, if y'all will raise your hands. They're going to be up at the table here tonight. If you have any questions about sponsorship, please feel free to talk to them after the meeting. And reminder, smokers, please use the butt cam provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. There are other church members using the church this evening. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. There's a way that you can go in and register, and we will send you information when our group has the weekends that we have, simply the steps. And then in the spring, in the fall, we also have something, too, to follow up on in a weekend workshop-type setting. I'd like to thank our panel again, Bobby and Bob. Thanks so much. Thanks to all who participated. After we clean up, we are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on step 3, which was discussed tonight, at the meeting after the meeting. And this group, we go out to dinner at Plaza del Sol. It's on Colonial Avenue and 22nd Street. So anyone that would like to come out, last week we had, 20 people, 25 people, and we go out to dinner there. And I've got, do I have a volunteer who is willing to read the last two paragraphs?
I got you. My name's Evan. I'm an alcoholic.
Evan.
You get to the right page. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you could do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourselves to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God keep you and bless you until then. Thank you.
Thanks, Evan. And we're going to close with the Lord's Prayer for those who wish to pray.
Father.
Amen.